Good morning, folks, and thank you for tuning in to The Global Current, Seton Hall's School of Diplomacy podcast. Each week, we break down a new topic in global affairs and have a conversation with students to analyze different perspectives. This is your host, Eric Butts. Today, we're discussing Australia's new social media law. But before we dive into it, let's check in with this week's news briefer, Shweta Parthasarathy, who will update us on news headlines from around the globe. Shweta?
Thank you, Eric. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced the country's withdrawal from the 2011 Istanbul Convention on Women's Rights, sparking widespread protests. The convention promised to protect women from the gender-based violence and promote gender equality. Even before it was ratified, the convention was controversial within Turkey. Conservatives claimed it disrupted the traditional family values of Turkish citizens, while women's rights activists believed the convention was necessary to preserve their rights. Turkish officials claim that the withdrawal will have no impact on the government's commitment to women's rights. Two suicide bombers attacked a Catholic church in an Indonesian city on Palm Sunday, wounding 19 people. The bombers were the only two fatalities. The perpetrators are believed to be members of Jamaah Ansarut Daulah, or JAD, an Islamic militant group based in Indonesia. The group was found to be responsible for several other bombings and attacks in the last few years. A container ship called the Ever Given was stuck in the Suez Canal for almost a week, leaving several ships stranded on either side of the canal. The ship was dislodged and is now floating in the canal after blocking it for almost a week. Tugboats had spent several hours on Monday working to free the bow of the vessel after dislodging the stern earlier in the day. At least five people have been killed and dozens wounded after protests in Bangladesh turned violent. Security forces and police opened fire on students peacefully protesting the visit of India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The purpose of Prime Minister Modi's visit was to hold talks with Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina and give them over a million COVID-19 vaccine doses. The protesters, however, believed Modi's domestic policies have alienated the Muslim population in India, a Hindu-majority country. Student activists Nasiruddin Price and Mukta Barut shared their reasons for protesting.
The current ruling party is still able to hang on to power because of the aggressive policy and support given by India. This is clear to the people now, and to protect their own interests, they've nakedly attacked the interests of the citizens.
Those who are currently in power are involved with Modi to cling onto their seat, which is why the ruling party now needs Modi's support to stay in power.
A 9-story building in Egypt collapsed last week, killing more than a dozen people and injuring several others. The cause of the building's collapse is still unknown, but an engineering committee has been created to determine the cause and investigate neighboring buildings. Egypt has had several buildings collapse in recent years due to poor construction and, in many cases, developers ignoring safety measures to increase profits. Dozens have been killed and hundreds forced to flee after an attack in Mozambique. Islamic militants have reportedly taken over the town of Palma in the northern region of Mozambique, forcing hundreds of residents to flee to nearby forests, mangroves, or other villages. More than 100 people fled to a hotel in Palma, but only about 20 people were flown to safety in helicopters, while the rest were ambushed outside the hotel. This attack is an extension of an insurgency led by militants linked to the Islamic State. The fighting has left more than 2,500 people dead and 700,000 displaced. Police in Belarus arrested more than 100 people as they prepared to protest President Alexander Lukashenko. Among the hundreds detained were five Belarusian journalists. The protests began in August 2020 after Lukashenko claimed his sixth term in office in a vote which the opposition party and several international leaders have called rigged. This was the first major gathering after protests died down during the winter because of a violent crackdown that resulted in thousands of deaths and arrests. Slovakia's Prime Minister Igor Matovič has offered to switch roles with Finance Minister Eduard Heger. The swap is meant to resolve a political crisis that began after Matovič ordered a shipment of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine without the support of his coalition or the European Union. Matovič proposed a swap to bring the coalition back together and prevent the crisis from worsening the devastation caused by the coronavirus pandemic.
Okay, thank you so much, Shweta. Now for today's topic. In February, the Australian Parliament passed a new law, the News Media Bargaining Bill. The legislation was aimed at forcing big technology platforms such as Google and Facebook to pay for the news content posted on their sites. Designed to help Australia's struggling news media organizations, the bill triggered a strong response by Facebook and Google. Facebook quickly banned all Australian news for 5 days before coming to an agreement with the government. Who does this law benefit? And why did it scare big tech companies so much? Joining me today to discuss this and more are two of our own Seton Hall students. Our domestic analyst for today is Daniela Macera. Welcome to the show, Daniela.
Hello, Eric. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for coming on. And today's international analyst is Chimdi Chukwukere.
Hello, Eric.
Hello, Chimdi. Daniela, let's start with you. Can you give us just an overview of what this bill is, the news media bargaining bill? What is it? What's in it?
Yes, of course. So this new bill, which was proposed by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, basically requires Facebook and Google to pay news organizations for original content show on their platform. And this was a response to complaints from news companies that they were not being compensated for the content that Facebook, in this instance, was including in their ads.
Okay, so the bill requires Facebook, so social media companies, to pay the newspapers, the online newspapers for their content. That's correct?
Right. They have to pay for the information that Facebook or Google would include in their ads because they are not the original producers. And the question comes when they talk about bargaining power imbalances and how these major digital platforms are getting the majority of their revenues from the ads. For instance, just to give you an example, for every $100 Australian dollars spent on digital advertising in Australian media these days, $80, so basically 80%, goes to Google and Facebook, when the original producers of the content are these news publishers. And this is what the bill is trying to give back. It's trying to give those gains or those revenues, redistribute that more in a more equitable way back to the actual producers.
And so, like, I have a Samsung, I have an Android phone, and if I swipe left from the home screen, I have this whole Google News feed. So the idea of the bill is that, you know, Google can't just post those things for free now. They have to pay for the content. Now, let me ask you real quick, what was kind of the lead up to the bill in Australia? Was there like a big push from news organizations to lead up to this bill, or?
So the actual history of this bill goes all the way back to 2017, when Australia's competition regulator recommended a voluntary code in its digital platforms inquiry to address bargaining power imbalances between these major digital platforms like Google and Facebook and media businesses. Later on, Australia actually appointed the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, or the ACCC, to investigate whether Facebook or Google had been disrupting the news media market, hindering publishers and also consumers. Then we shift forward to 2019, when Australia said that it would establish the world's first dedicated office to police Facebook and Google and other kind of companies that are part of big tech. And that is when the government also directed the ACCC to work with both the news and the digital platform businesses to develop a voluntary code. This work was picked up in 2020 when the ACCC released a draft legislation for the media bargaining code. And it was in December that this bill was introduced to Parliament. And it was just this year in February that the bill was passed. And this is when we saw the big reaction from Facebook to block news feeds in Australia for 5 days. That led to an escalation. And then finally, they were able to work things around and make some amendments. But that is basically what led up to the current situation in which Facebook and Google have to abide by the law.
Yeah, so this bill goes back years in the making. Let me turn to you now, Chimdi. Obviously, other countries have the same problem. I'm assuming that Google and Facebook have a similar profit model in other countries. Has there been any similar reactions elsewhere in the world?
Thank you, Eric. There have been kind of reactions from all over the world concerning the new Australian bill. I think one that is noteworthy is from Canada, the Canadian Heritage Minister, when Australia announced the bill, the Canadian Heritage Minister Stephen Gobert tweeted that the world must stand united when facing the web giants, and Canada stands in solidarity with its Australian partners, and that Canada is also working to introduce similar bill so that there can be kind of an equitable digital framework across platforms and news media. And this is not just in Canada. There have also been discussions about this advertising and use of this news content on their platform. So, yes, there have been reactions to the bill. And I also want to point out that even before the bill came, there was already kind of tensions with the big tech. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel have raised concerns after Donald Trump was blocked. They called it problematic. She called the move problematic, and saying that the right of freedom is of fundamental importance. So, and big tech should not be granted such power to regulate heads of state. So there have also been backlash from G7 leaders, particularly after Facebook banned Australia from viewing news media. And G7 leaders responded that it was investigating and looking at big tech's activities on freedom of speech and social media.
Okay, wow. So it's not, it's not just a matter of news. They're looking at the bans in the U.S. and more broadly at the big influential power that big technology has. And actually, I've used this word in my intro, and we've used it a couple times already, just speaking about it. When we talk about big tech, we're not just talking about Facebook and Google, are we? There's a couple other players. What about, like Microsoft, Amazon, Apple? How have they reacted to the events in Australia and other news bans?
Yes, I think, thank you, Eric. I think that's a very good question, because when Facebook banned Australia, Microsoft came in and stood with the government. So Microsoft was of the opinion that actually big tech needs to be regulated and because this revenue needs to be shared equally. And also assured, because Google threatened that it will shut down its search engines in Australia. If Google shuts down its search engine in Australia, it will roll out its Bing. That it was ready to optimize Bing for use in Australia. So, and immediately Google backtracked. That was actually why Google backtracked and made an agreement. So we also see this earlier this year. I think WhatsApp tried to roll out a new privacy agreement whereby if users failed to agree to that new agreement, they will stop to use WhatsApp. So, but Signal was rolled out, a social media app called Signal was rolled out, and WhatsApp backtracked from that decision. So it's more like these companies seem to be making decisions because they feel that they are indispensable. But once a competition comes up, there seems to be a change of action from them. So yeah, there have been responses from other big tech.
Yeah, so it's not just... not every technology company is with Google and Facebook in this case. And it's kind of funny to me that potential competition from Microsoft with Bing, because nobody really wants to use Bing, prevented Google from pulling out of Australia. So Danielle, let me go back to you now. What are some of the potential longer term effects of this bill starting to take shape now? I mean, this happened in February in Australia.
So some of the long-term effects surrounds the topic of politics, in the sense that based on the agreement right now, because of the new amendment, Facebook would have the ability to negotiate with the news publishers and set a fair price that they both agree on. But as far as we know, the agreements that Facebook has reached has mostly been with companies that promote a specific type of ideology and political beliefs that might not necessarily represent the Australian public opinion in an equitable way. So now we're talking about the monopoly of influence. Tech companies like Facebook or Google can become complicit or partially responsible for any type of misinformation or any type of bias. For example, we could talk about the role that Twitter had at a time of the election in the US, where former President Trump used his platform to influence the public opinion, might be in a biased way. Although Facebook has argued that their platform has helped news publishers reach a higher traffic and send traffic to their sites, the preliminary deals that they have so far are with mostly conservative news companies like Seven West Media. That is, in the long term, an effect that could have in that type of news that Australians have at hand. Because as the Treasurer Josh Freddie Denkberg said, Facebook is the most important social platform for news in the country. That means that most of the public opinion and the own critical thinking that Australians create comes from Facebook. So if most of the information that they're getting comes from a platform that is promoting a mostly conservative ideology or conservative ideas or news, then that's what they would consume the most, and it will probably not be able to access other type of information. Another effect too is that it creates an alarm for digital ethics, because the law demonstrates that there could be an inordinate power of social media companies to control news and public information in a way that companies can become gatekeepers to the news for public consumption.
Okay, so that's some potential unintended side effects of this bill. Intended just to get financial support to struggling news organizations, but in doing so, Facebook and Google aren't signing deals with every single organization, and the organizations that they do aren't necessarily, maybe skewed or biased to one side. So you could see a shift in the news diet of people, because most people get their news through Facebook or Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, we should note. That could actually change the media landscape of an entire country.
Ideally, Facebook and Google would be able to make deals with, like you said, every type of news company. Mm-hmm. But this deal allows for an inequality of tech power, meaning that mostly big news companies would benefit. So a well-intentioned bill might end up making rich companies even richer with little benefit to smaller ones. For example, News Corp, which is a company that has already made a big agreement with Facebook that already owns the Wall Street Journal and the Times, mm-hmm. is offering a lot of its content in return for significant payments. And smaller startups are not able to reach favorable deals with Facebook or Google.
It's like the same thing. You know, if you go to a small local store, the prices are probably going to be higher than at a big box store, because the big store can has more leverage when it comes to purchasing things. It's the same kind of idea, except we're dealing with a political landscape, not just goods here. Can I ask about the reaction? So, of course, following the bill, Facebook and Google weren't happy about it. And Facebook, at least, instituted a news ban. 5 days, no news from Australian news outlets at all. How did Australian politicians and the Australian government react to this?
They were outraged. Most Australian representatives did not show any kind of approval for what Facebook had done. For instance, Treasurer Josh Frydenberg said that the ban on news information had a huge community impact because of the amount of Australians, like I said before, 17 million Australians visit the social media site every month. And the Western Australian Premier Mark McGowan accused Facebook of behaving like a North Korean dictator. So his comments were very drastic in that sense. And the reason for such reaction is because when this ban occurred, it was not just news companies, news publishers that couldn't post their content, but also sites that were managed by the Ministry of Health, sending information about the pandemic, COVID, and vaccines were not able to put their information. And this was a huge stab for the Australian government, because at a time where there's also misinformation going on, there's a need to debunk these kind of articles going around. That was the initial reaction. And as they were able to work with Facebook, then they became less reactive and aggressive with their comments. But that was the initial reaction, not a good one.
Yeah, not entirely surprising. I don't think governments are used to being challenged by companies like that in such an open way. And in the beginning, especially, we saw a lot of outrage, you know, from the Australian government and from other governments, Chimdi, as you noted. Do you think there is a possibility of this style of legislation, with its good things and its bad things, spreading elsewhere to other countries in the world?
Thank you, Eric, for the question. And I think that Facebook banned news platforms from Australia. The G7 were just finishing up with their meeting, and when asked, they said they discussed about social media and freedom of speech following this ban. So the G7 have consisting of Canada, France, Germany, Japan, United Kingdom, and United States. They discussed about this. Apart from that, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Australia's leader Scott Morrison also talked about this extensively. Speaking on India earlier this year, India issued strict rules on its own, requiring social media to create three roles in India: a compliance officer who will ensure social media companies follow local laws, a grievance officer who will address complaints from Indian users about their platform, and a contact person available for India law enforcement 24/7. So the companies were also required to publish a compliance report every month, detailing how many complaints they received and what action they took. And as I told you, Canada also have always been vocal about opposing this bill, saying that if countries needed a reason why big tech should be regulated, Facebook just handed that to governments. And also insisted that Canada, we are working on following similar paths to issue a more equitable digital framework across platforms and news media. There is kind of a united backlash from what governments concerning the increasing and aggressive nature posture of big tech. So yes, I expect other governments to follow through with such legislation.
Yeah, so this might spread, which might have been just what Facebook and Google feared. I know in the US, and it's slightly unrelated, that there was legislation recently announced to antitrust legislation with the aim of splitting up Instagram and Facebook. So that's just kind of a demonstration of the growing anti-big tech movement. I just want to ask real quickly, Daniela, do you think that this kind of bill, the good thing being it helps news media organizations survive, but the bad thing being that it gives more of a biased media landscape, more biased view towards big media companies. Do you think this is a good thing overall, or do you think that it needs to be to change quite a bit to go forward?
I think this is a good first step for an effort to regulate big tech. But at the same time, it's a good example for other countries, like Chimdi has been saying, to act upon it and see the type of reaction that Facebook has had and what that could mean for their own governments. It might not be ideal for smaller news companies, but it is doing the job of retributing back to original content creators, which I think it's important. I think this just serves as an example that regulating these big platforms is possible. So I think it represents, it creates a precedent for other governments to do similar things and to take into consideration, for example, now how they could make it more accessible for news, smaller news companies to reach an agreement and receive a fair payment. Because right now with the new amendment, there's an arbitrator, a third party, different from the news companies and Facebook or Google to set the price, the fair price between them. So in a way it does create an opportunity for the smaller companies to have access to Facebook. But it is just something to consider in the future.
Okay, so a good first step, but we still have much to learn. What about you, Chimzi? Do you think it's a good thing?
Yes, I agree with Daniela. And I think it's a good first step in regulating big tech and ensuring that revenues is shared equitably between content creators and content aggregators like big tech. I feel moving forward that government should kind of take this initiative to even look into other antitrust practices, as you raised up earlier, that big tech engages in. For instance, the practice of kind of moving Facebook starting as a social media platform and just from there to going into advertising, from moving into advertising to moving into news, publishing news media. And so that this kind of bill, I think it helps to kind of regulate that and see that is either these big tech companies kind of state clearly that their publishers or their advertisers or their just strictly social media companies. So I feel it is a good first step towards regulating big tech.
Okay, all right. Well, this has been a fantastic discussion. Chimzi, Daniela, thank you so much for joining me here today. And that is all for today. Be sure to follow The Global Current on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for updates and upcoming shows. This show would not be possible without our dedicated crew. Executive producer Jared Dang, associate producers Jasmine DeLeon and Joaquin Matsimus, technical producers Joel Moran and Brittany Segura, and assistant technical producer Jason Mariaski. I'm your host, Eric Bunce. The Global Current is brought to you by the School of Diplomacy and International Relations at Seton Hall University. As always, keep it current with us and catch us on the waves every Sunday at 8:30 a.m. on 89.5 WSOU. Until next time, thank you.